Pastor Sam, and I'll try a little bit of my Swahili. Haberi za asubuhi. Buona sifiwe. That's about all I have right now. So it's great to be back in Kenya, and we do bring you greetings from the elders and leaders of One Church, formerly Trinity Church and City Life Church, two healthy churches merged and married in the spirit of John 17, where Jesus says, I pray they would be perfectly one. And so about a year ago, two churches began to discern if God was bringing them together. And today marks the 22nd week that the two churches have become one church and now called One Church. And so we're super excited about that. And so they bring you, or they send you, greetings from Lansing, Michigan. And I hope you receive those greetings. Absolutely. Thank you. But also my family sends you greetings as well. I'll show you, these are some of the pictures. Obviously that's me and my beautiful wife, Tanya. And we've been married 31 years. And it'll be 32 in July. Here is, I can look right here. All right, here is my son in the yellow hat. He's not married, so if you, y'all can hit me up. I'll give you my WhatsApp, I'll give you my number, and you can WhatsApp me, and I can pass that on to him. This is the birth of our third grandchild. The guy, the light-skinned guy, as well as the light-skinned girl, they don't look anything like us. But Ashton, he is our unofficially adopted son. His mother passed away, and he became part of our family. And so him and his wife, Monique, had a little baby about 4 months ago. His name is Amado David. And so we're super grateful. And then my daughter, who is on the left side, she's my mini-me. She's not married either. So we're looking for a nice Kenyan man for her. And then the two young ladies, the one with the striped sweater, she's from Germany. Her name is Amina. We have foreign exchange students living with us. She's from Frankfurt, Germany. And then Isabel is the one on the end. She's from Mexico. So my wife and I decided to become empty nesters and then to fill the nest back up again. And so that's part of my family. There are a few more pictures, at least of Micah. Okay, so that's a larger kind of picture. So you have Micah and his wife, Megan. Those are our other two grandchildren, Malia and Malachi, and so that's our family, and they send you greetings as well, and I'm super grateful that they released me to be with you for this time. We are here to connect with our ministry partners, one being Compassion International, and we'll be going to McEwaney on tomorrow, and then we'll be there for about a week. And then we'll come back and we'll be a part of Redeemed Gospel Church that's in Korogosho, where we have a compassion program there as well. And I could not be in Nairobi without stopping by to say hello and greetings to my friends and brothers and sisters here at Mamlaka Hill Chapel. And so I believe there's a word from the Lord today. And if you've been around individuals who have had any kind of surgery or trauma, it doesn't take long for them to eventually in the conversation point to the scar where the surgery happened. Now, if you're in my presence for any period of time, I will more than likely show you a scar that I have. And you know, I debated whether I was gonna do this or not, and I gotta take my shoe off. I didn't put lotion on this morning. And so so when I was in high school, here is, if you can zoom in on that, this is a scar that I, wow, you're very close, bro. Now you're getting all the ash and stuff, you know. Okay, yes. So when I was in high school, I was playing basketball in the alley in Chicago, and the first play of the game, I came down in a crack, and I broke my ankle. So my ankle was stuck like this, and the bone coming out on the other side. Don't mean to gross you out so early in the morning. And so my mother took me to the doctor, and the physician, don't know really where he got his medical license, because he just simply said it was a sprain. And my mother, shout out to all the caring moms in the room, my mother said to the doctor, "This is not a sprain. You better get a specialist here to see about this." So they called a specialist, and she came in, and she looked at my ankle and said, "This is not a sprain, duh." And so they ordered a splint for my ankle, and the next morning they did a surgery at 6 o'clock. And I bear this scar as a sign of something actually happened. I remember it like it was yesterday, where I went up strong for the layup and came down, and it was painful. And I have the scar to prove it. So anytime a person shows you their scar, they're not only showing you their skin, they're actually telling the story. They're telling the story of the scar. They're actually saying that something happened. Something happened, and this was the accident that happened. This is what I went through. This is where I almost lost something. Scars are strange things. It's evident that something went wrong, and it's evidence that healing actually has begun. That this has healed a long time ago, and yet it still is a reminder that something happened, and yet something that, as I followed the doctor's orders, it began to heal. I think that's the reason why the text that we're going to look at today, John 20, is such a very powerful, powerful story for all of us. Because when Jesus rises from the grave, he rises with scars. That's very interesting that the God of the universe could have actually eradicated the scars, but he did not. He chose for his son to be raised with scars. He still bears the marks. He still bore the marks of crucifixion. He still bore the marks of Calvary. And so the scars and the suffering says, they say that the pain was real, but resurrection says that the suffering did not win. And so, for anyone in this room and anyone who's watching online, if you're carrying pain and you're carrying disappointment, you're carrying grief, or you're carrying bruised faith, this is very good news for all of us. If the risen Son of God stood victorious with scars, I believe so can we. We can stand in that same victory. I think many of us, however, though, we assume that if God is really at work in our lives, then there should not be any scars that remain. If God was really at work and transforming, then we think that there should be no painful marks. There should be, if restoration is actually happening, there should be no evidence of the injury that survived. But the risen Christ, I wonder if you've ever thought about that, he stood with scars. The risen Christ, the victorious one, the one who rose again on the third day, he stands with scars. It is a theology that we rarely ever preach in the Church of Jesus Christ. We love the victory, and we love the victorious, and we love the hope of the resurrection, which I think is absolutely amazing. But the risen Christ does rise with scars.
He stands before us and he tells us a different story. And this is so much good news for wounded people. This is whether your scars are visible or whether your scars are invisible. There are people in the room and people online right now. You not only have visible scars, you have invisible scars. And yeah, this is such good news for anyone who has wounded hearts. This is good news for anyone who has bruised faith. This is good news for anyone who is feeling the strain in their faith and disappointment in their faith and confusion in their faith and pain in their faith. And because this text teaches us something very clearly in John 20, which we'll get to, you can be wounded and not finished. Somebody needed to hear that today. You can be wounded and not finished. That the risen Christ, if he stands in victory, so can you and I. And John gives us that truth through the story of Thomas. So if you have a copy of the scriptures, turn with me to John chapter 20. We're going to be looking at verses 24 through 29. I'll just read the passage. It says, "Now Thomas, one of the 12 called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, 'We have seen the Lord.' But he said to them, 'Unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails and place my finger into the mark of the nails and place my hand into his side, I will never believe.' 8 days later, his disciples were inside again, and Thomas was with them, although the doors were locked. Jesus came and stood among them and said, 'Peace be with you.' Then he said to Thomas, 'Put your finger here and see my hands, and put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe.' Thomas answered him, 'My Lord and my God.' Jesus said to him, 'Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed.'" So I'm going to try to make three moves in this text. And connect them together. And the first move is we're introduced to a man who refuses to pretend. We're introduced to Thomas. And Thomas gets a bad rap, and Thomas is not the villain in the story, and the church has done a disservice to Thomas, and we have relegated one moment and we have given him a name for 2,000 years. And that name is what? Doubting Thomas. We take one moment in time and Thomas's doubt, and we say it is the truest thing about him, but it is not the truest thing about Thomas. In fact, Thomas was loyal to Jesus. Thomas was faithful to Jesus. All you have to do is go back to John 11 when Jesus is about to go into danger and he knows that he's about to die. What does Thomas say? "We will go with you and to die with you." That doesn't sound like the voice of a coward. It sounds like the voice of courage. In John 14, Thomas says, "Hey, show us the Father, and where are you going?" And Jesus actually declares one of the most impactful statements in the Christian church, and he declares, "I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. No man comes to the Father except through me." And Jesus proclaims that based on Thomas's question. It seems like every time Thomas talks, Jesus takes his faith deeper. And I think that is true. It should be true for us as well. So Thomas is not shallow. He's not rebellious. He's not unbelieving. Thomas is honest. And I wish I had more Christians. I wish I knew more Christians that were honest with their faith. And John 20, we see this in him. His faith is very honest. It's trying to give birth to a more robust faith. But typically what we do, we say, "How are you? I'm fine." And "How are you? I'm fine." And "How is your walk with Jesus?" Oh, it's everything is great. And deep down inside, we are Thomas. This is not casual skepticism. This is a struggling for a deep and robust and strong faith. Our faith should not be shallow. This is wounded faith. Thomas trusted Jesus. Thomas had followed Jesus. Thomas had built hope around Jesus. Thomas watched Jesus die.
And now Thomas is saying, I cannot survive false hope. I cannot survive false hope. I need more than the report of someone else's testimony. I need more than the report of someone else, of the disciples' word that Jesus rose again. What Thomas needs, and what I need, and what you need, is an encounter with the living Jesus. That's what we need. I thank God for your testimony. I thank God for how God transformed your life. But I cannot build my life and my faith on your testimony. I need to meet Jesus for myself. I need to see his hands. I need to see his feet. I need to see his side so that I might encounter him so that he might revolutionize my faith. That's the reason it's important. For if you are a young person here, your mother's faith, your father's faith is great, but you need a faith of your own. One that is strong. One that struggles to trust. And there's a difference here between a hardened disbelief or unbelief and a wounded faith. And what we're looking at in Thomas' case is wounded faith. I love the fact that even though his faith is wounded, even though his faith is wounded, he is still in the room. He could have actually left. He could have actually left community. He could have left his faith a long time ago. Jesus died. Jesus is not here. He could have left and it would have been done. But Thomas stays in the room and he struggles until Jesus shows up and for Jesus, for him to have an encounter with him. He's struggling, but he's still present. I would dare say some of you are in that place now. You're struggling in your faith and you're wondering, we just come off resurrection weekend and you're still saying, do I really believe that Jesus rose from the dead? Do I really believe that he's enough for me? And yet the beauty of this is even while you're struggling, you're still in the room. You're still in the room. You keep coming back again and again, singing the songs, reading the scriptures, showing up for small group and trying to get hooked up for, you know, getting married and stuff. Oh, the little engaged thing that's coming up. You're still in the room. I think that's really significant. Some people think if you struggle in your faith, God is angry with you. That somehow if you question your faith that you have failed. That some you say, well, if I don't sing loudly, if I don't show up every Sunday when the doors are open, then something is wrong with me spiritually. I think Thomas teaches us something very important, that honest faith does not always look triumphant. Sometimes honest faith, it drags in here. Sometimes honest faith says, I don't know. Sometimes honest faith is not always celebratory. Sometimes honest faith just simply says, I will keep struggling and struggling until Jesus meets me in the room. And so, Jesus does show up. Shows up a week later, and he appears again, and he says, peace be with you. That's what the text says. And he turned straight to Thomas. And I love this. And don't miss it. Here's one of the places where we see Jesus being the most tender. He shows up. He doesn't excoriate Thomas. He doesn't shame Thomas. He doesn't expose him. He doesn't humiliate him. He doesn't make Thomas a public spectacle or warning. He meets him. This is what he says. Put your fingers here. See my hands. Put out your hand. Place it in my side. Don't disbelieve, but believe. You know what's interesting about this? Jesus gives Thomas his own words back to him, and Jesus is not in the room when he says it, which lets me know that Thomas's pain was not hidden from Jesus, Thomas's disappointment was not hidden from Jesus, and neither is yours. Maybe you're crying in your car. Maybe you're crying in your room. Maybe you're crying when nobody else hears you. And I want you to know that, the text says in Psalm 56 that the God of heaven captures your tears in his bottle. He hears your pain. He hears your disappointment. When you think he's absent, he is right there with you. And he hears your doubts. And he hears your struggles. And he hears your pain like he heard Thomas's pain. Thomas's crisis was not ignored, and neither is yours. Jesus knew exactly where to meet. Jesus knew exactly where faith became difficult for Thomas. For some, it may be it became difficult for you when you lost a child. Maybe faith became difficult for you when you prayed and prayed and prayed, and it felt like God did not show up. It maybe faith became difficult for you when you prayed for a husband or a wife and God did not give it to you yet. So maybe God knows exactly where faith has become difficult for you in your life right now. Maybe it's a divorce. Faith became difficult. It became difficult for me in a couple of ways. It became difficult for me when I saw my dad hit my mom. How can a loving God, how can a good God allow a husband who says that he loves his wife to do that? It became difficult for me when I was in a philosophy class and Dr. Chacon, for the first time in half of a semester, he finally said that he was an atheist. And in that moment, I began to struggle in my faith. And I knew that God became, he knew when faith became difficult for me, because I went from sitting in the front of the class to the middle of class to the back of the class to actually missing class. Because every single day, he began to say, Christians, people who believe in Jesus, are either drunk, crazy, or imbeciles. So faith became very difficult for me. Almost to the point where I gave up on God. I started doubting whether God existed. I began to doubt whether or not that the resurrection was true, the crucifixion was true. But Jesus does not do any of that to Thomas. He does not excoriate him. He actually says, I see you. He doesn't crush his faith. He meets it. He doesn't despise the struggler. He comes near to the struggler. He does not reduce people to their worst moment in their lives. He redirects them toward faith. And Thomas answers with one of the most confessional declarations in all of Christian history. My Lord, my God, I believe. And notice he hadn't even put his hands in the prints. He says, my Lord, my God, you are Messiah. I believe. The doubter becomes a worshiper. The struggler becomes a confessor. The wounded man actually speaks the deepest truth. And I believe this. Some of the strongest confessions are born from some of the deepest struggles. So stay in the room. But there's another move in this text that I think we have to look at, and that is Jesus' scars prove that redemption does not require removal. That redemption does not require removal. So Jesus could have been raised. He could have been raised without scars, but he chose to rise with them. Why? I think there are several reasons. First, the scars literally identify him. He's not another Jesus. He actually is the one who was crucified. His scars actually connect Friday to Sunday. That this is the real Jesus. They're not meeting another Jesus. They are meeting the crucified Jesus who now stands alive. But a second reason why the scars, I think, are important, because the scars testify that his suffering was real. The nails were real.
The spear was real. The blood was real. The death was real. The cross was not some sort of symbolic pain. It happened. It really happened on Calvary. There were real nails and real blood, and there was a real cry from the cross. And I think the wounds remain because heaven refuses to downplay Calvary. Heaven refuses to downplay suffering. Heaven refuses to downplay pain. God actually redeems the world through his son, through suffering and through pain. But I think there's a third reason, and this is really kind of the heart of the passage. Scars show us, thirdly, that glory and suffering can live in the same body. I wish I knew how to preach this. I really wish I knew how to preach that sometimes we resist the fact that the Christian life is really about a suffering life. But who in the room doesn't like the glory part? Who in the room doesn't like the celebration part? Who in the room doesn't like the prosperity part? But the 90, I would guess 90%, if we're truly living as followers of Jesus, it's about suffering, you all. Suffering for our faith. Suffering for standing on this thing called the resurrection. If the resurrection goes away, we might as well close up everything. But we stand on the resurrection. And if we stay with Jesus long enough, he will. Peter says, when we do right, the glory of God rests on us. And this is the beauty of the scars from a victorious Jesus. Suffering and joy and glory can reside in the same body, in the same house, in the same family, in the same church, in the same friend group, that suffering is not the end. There will be glory as well. So Jesus stands before Thomas, alive and scarred. Jesus' wound say it happened. The resurrection says it did not win, though. That is the gospel. Isaiah 53:5, by his wounds we are healed. Again, notice, by his wounds, through his wounds, the Hebrew says, not apart from his wounds, but through them and by them. So God did not save the world by avoiding suffering. He actually saved the world, and he entered suffering. He bore suffering, and he defeated suffering. And so, Jesus is not standing before Thomas bleeding out. He is standing before Thomas in victory. But the marks remain. Why? Because redeemed pain still has something to say. Redeem pain still preaches. Redeem pain is resilient. Redeem pain says, yes, it is a sacrifice, but I stand in victory. Redeem pain says that even though I've gone through, I still am surviving. I am still standing. Some of you should have been gone, should have fallen over a long time ago. But because Jesus stands in victory, you also stand in victory. And we celebrate that. And then finally, this third move, wounded people are not finished people. Wounded people are not finished people. The church has always had wounds. Many of you already know that. The church has always had wounds. In the Gospels, Judas betrays, Peter denies, the disciples run, and Acts, conflict breaks out, complaints rise, and sharp disagreement happens. Across history, churches have carried failure and fractures. The church in the South in the U.S. should have stood up and said, slavery is a sinful evil, and it did not. The church has always had disappointments and pain. And yet, the church still lives. 2,000 years later, the gates of hell have not prevailed against the church. Why? It's not because the church is flawless. It is because Christ is risen. And sometimes we act as if wounds prove that God is absent. Actually, the scars prove that he is right there with us. Pain and disappointment doesn't disqualify people from usefulness. A bruised faith doesn't say that the believer in Jesus has no future. But John 20 tells us another story. The risen Christ still had wounds and he was still Lord. He still had scars and he was still God. He still had marks and he was still glorious. He still had pierced hands and pierced feet and a pierced side and he was still victorious. So hear me clearly. A wounded person is not a finished person. A wounded church is not a finished church. Let me be clear. Now, this does not excuse sin in our lives in any way. It does not give us permission to live a dysfunctional life. It does not call us to deny any kind of harm that we've caused or that's been caused to us. Sin must be confronted. Repentance must still happen. Healing matters. Truth matters. But scars do not mean that Christ has abandoned you. Believer can be wounded and still useful. A leader can be wounded and still humble. A church can be wounded and still bear witness. A congregation can pass through pain and still become a place of resurrection life. We just saw it. We just saw 9 people get baptized. 9 in the first service were baptized. And I think 8 in the next service, that redemption is happening. There's something glorious in the church of Jesus Christ. Whether in the U.S. or whether in Nairobi, Kenya. Something is beautiful about not only Thomas's confession, but ours as well. The invitation is for all of us to cry out with Thomas, "My Lord, my God." So the question is not whether you and I have wounds. The question is whether you will bring those wounds to Jesus. The question is not whether the church has scars. The question is whether those scars will be surrendered to Christ and let him redeem those. The question is not whether your faith or my faith is bruised. The question is whether you and I will stay in the room long enough for the risen Christ to meet us there. That is really the question. So, being wounded doesn't mean you're abandoned. Scar doesn't mean you're useless. Shaken doesn't mean that you're finished. Bruised doesn't mean that you're buried. If Jesus Christ, the risen one, rose with scars, then your scars don't have to be the end of your story. Whether visible wounds or invisible ones. If Jesus met Thomas in his struggle, I believe he will meet you in yours. If Jesus kept the marks and still carried glory, then God is able to redeem what has hurt you, what has disappointed you, what has pained you, and also let his glory rest on your life as well. But you and I got to stay in the room. We got to bring him our questions, bring him our disappointment, bring him our weary faith, bring him our wounded heart. And when we do, he comes near. He doesn't turn away. So his scars to us, shown to us, prove his love for us, prove his victory to us. They are the proof that resurrection belongs to people who have been through hell and death and are still standing. His scars matter. Your scars matter. He stands in victory, and anyone who stands in him and are found in him and new creations in him, you too can stand in that victory. That victory is unique to him, but he does give us some of that victory as well as we stand in him. So, yeah, we are wounded, but we're not finished. Let me pray for us. So God, thank you for letting your son be raised with scars. It truly is a theology that death and suffering, suffering and death actually happened. He identified himself as not another Jesus, but the real one that died on Calvary. Somebody needed to hear, I know I needed to hear it over and over again. God, thank you for just letting me preach the gospel to myself over and over again, because I need to be reminded that glory and suffering can reside in the same body. You've not abandoned me. You've not abandoned us when we go through pain, when we go through suffering. We're so quick to get to the celebration of resurrection and sometimes forget the beauty of the scars, the importance of the scars, and the risen Christ. And those scars, by those scars, we too can be healed spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and any other way you desire to heal us. Thank you for this church. Thank you for the leaders. And I pray your blessing upon every single person under the sound of my voice. I pray that we would leave this place with hope, knowing that you, Jesus, are victorious. And so can we be victorious as well. We pray this in your name, Jesus. Even the one who bears the scars. Even the one who gives us the hope of resurrection. Amen. God bless you all.